Hello, Happy New Year, and welcome to the Two Robbies podcast, your destination for in-depth discussion and analysis of the Premier League and the Champions League. I'm Robbie Musto, he's Robbie Earle, and here is our breakdown of week 20 in the Premier League season. Arsenal took on rivals Tottenham in the North London Derby and won 2-0. Manchester United come from a goal down to beat City 2-1 in the Manchester Derby. Newcastle took all 3 points late to beat Fulham 1-0. Brighton throttle Liverpool 3-0 at home. And Chelsea get their first win in the last four Premier League games, beating Crystal Palace 1-0. That's all we've got coming up in today's episode.
That's right, Musty, and because the Premier League is back, so is your chance to win $50,000. Play Premier League Pick'em for free, and you can become the next big winner. Download the NBC Sports Predictor app today, available in the App Store or Google Play Store. OK, let's get to playing, because we had a North London derby, and in the first half, Spurs never played my friend again. And in the second half, when they tried to have a bit of a go, Arsenal were 2-0 up, Arsenal were dogged and determined, and Arsenal won the North London derby. Yeah. Let's start with Arsenal, because that's where the praise should go. 8 points clear at the top of the table. Maybe some pressure in certain way that the City had lost. Now, could they make the most of the opportunity? They have. They won. I thought it was a rounded performance, Rob. I thought their football ability stood out in the first half. I thought their determination stood out in the second half. And worthy winners. Halfway point now, Rob. 47 points. Arsenal are serious contenders.
Of course they are. I'd say they're favourites, Rob. We've had just half of the season. Maybe they've got one more for the half to come up for Arsenal, play 18 games right now. But as we are seeing with our eyes in, you know, basically the last few weeks as well, looking at Manchester City and a few of the others, they look really, really clearly to be the best team in the Premier League so far. Now, we can't see into the future in terms of drastic things that might happen, Rob, in terms of injuries or whatever, but my goodness, like, they look rock solid. Rock solid in two different ways after this North London derby. As you said, the first half, the silky football that we might expect to find a way through past a Spurs backline that hasn't been secure, even though it's cautious and pragmatic in the first half of games. I think you know, like I said to you, Rob, just before we come on, like, you could almost write this script to exactly what happened, really. Spurs, slow starters, back foot, cautious. Arsenal, with that space, find a way. Their football, their movement is so good at the moment, they often, nearly always find a way through. They go ahead. Second half will be different. And Spurs, you know, they certainly did react. I mean, it's incredible, Rob. We'll get on to Spurs, obviously, but it's incredible the difference in intensity from one half to the next half. But back to Arsenal, confirmation of how good they are on the ball, how good they are technically, how good, how confident Martinelli, Saka are right now from the wide areas, and how good technically they are in the middle of the park. I think you guys on the broadcast made points of the midfield area. Yeah. I mean, the way that they play, it's almost like a diamond with the three midfield players we just talked about, plus Saka and Partey, of course, and Nketiah coming in, and they absolutely dominated that area. Outstanding performances, Rob, from Martin Odegaard, who continues to grow reputationally. What you see, what people are talking about, stunning feat, end product. I think he's a top goal scorer now. I think with 7 Premier League goals for them. I thought he was superb. And then just quickly, Rob, as a quick comment on the second half, I enjoyed the second half maybe as much as the first half for Arsenal, because you saw a different side, a side that we all know they've got to show to win this Premier League over this long, long campaign. And we know how difficult that campaign is and how long it is in terms of fight, aggression and personality. And I tweeted out, Rob, that Granit Xhaka from... And listen, we can go back and talk about his history at the club, but the way that he has got his head down and now is such an important part in terms of personality, Rob. Personality. In that second half where you're watching Arsenal defend deep and heading balls away, they've got two extra centre-backs in Thomas Partey and Granit Xhaka. And we could do breakdowns of those two in centre-back positions. So when the ball comes in there and there's a bit of a flurry and a bit of a skirmish, those two... So it's like Arsenal playing with four centre-backs, protecting, cajoling, aggression, even from goal celebrations to fighting with opponents. Granit Xhaka's personality is something that held them back in the past, you might argue. But now, my goodness, I almost feel like I want to play with him, Rob, because he cares so much. He wants to win so much. Like, he's driving the team forward. It's impressive.
Yeah, and he's doing it with a control, Rob. It's emotion. It's drive and determination, but much more control than we've seen. He's maturing around these young players. I just also want to give a nod to... I was watching the game, Rob. Gabriel, I thought, was excellent. I thought he got his head onto things when there was a period in the second half where Spurs were having a go and Kulusevski was on putting balls in and Perisic was on, and then they changed and other players came into the game to try and get that goal. They got Richarlison on the pitch. Sonny started to try and influence it more. I just thought Gabriel once or twice got his head onto things, blocked things off, was strong, was determined, you know. Somebody who we've said at times has like the rick in him, the odd thing that doesn't go right. And the other player I've got to mention, mate, is a goalkeeper. By the way, this fella was, in contrast to Hugo Lloris, and we'll get onto Spurs and some of their issues, and we've talked about the goalkeeper, overall. Rob, I thought he was sharp, I thought he was bright, I thought he was alert. There was no like world-class saves, but everything he did was good, was aggressive. He's blocked with his feet, I think.
He made that one great save, Rob. That one good save. That foot, yeah.
With a foot save, yeah. That was a special save. Because it's one of those that doesn't look like it's brilliantly hit. It finds its way in the back, the corner of the net, and the game's different. I thought he's enthusiasm with the back four, Rob. He's somebody who has got relegated with Sheffield United, he's got relegated with Bournemouth. And I wasn't convinced. I've got to be honest, I wasn't convinced. I think a bit like Granit Xhaka, Rob. I think he's part of the personality in the dressing room that's important. And I thought he deserved a bit of special mention today because he was absolutely at the top of his game.
Totally agree, mate. Totally agree. It's a great shout, great mention. I was going to mention it as well. And when you look at the team, Rob, and I had a quick look back today, just watching the game, I got my computer out, and I just looked at their transfer dealings. I'm like, how they get to this point? I mean, this is like amazing how they've transformed. And if you look at the ins and outs over from 2020, it's pretty amazing the turnaround in the squad and the decisions that were made and the signings that came in and have been brilliant, straight away. Yeah. It hit the ground running from Zinchenko to Thomas Partey, that actually, to be fair, got a few injury issues. Now he looks like a brilliant, important player in there. All the business that they've done, as well as developing the younger players, we know about the wide players, Martinelli, Smith Rowe is back now in contention as well. Ben White is a signing, bringing Saliba back, goalkeeper signing Ramsdale, getting rid of David Luiz and a few other players that were from a couple of years back. That whole transformation has been, it's been stunning when you look at where they are on the league table right now, Rob. Yeah. So, you know, a combination of things and the two guys that we've talked about a lot, Edu, who's a big part of that, and of course the head coach, as Rebecca said on the show today, his first managerial position. He is on the brink of winning a spectacular Premier League title. I mean, you've got to say, Rob, with the points difference, 8 points with 20 games to go, and the way that they're looking, is this where we chuck in the cliche? Because I feel it probably is. Is theirs to lose for Arsenal?
Let's get the Man United game out of the way, and then let's have that conversation. Let's see how they go against United. But you're right. It starts to be, if anybody else was in that position, we'd start to be saying, Liverpool in that position. I think because historically, Rob, we don't know what, we haven't seen this team do 38 games. You know, I believe it's right, and, you know, I'm sure our viewers will let me know if I'm wrong, but I don't think Arsenal have ever had 90 plus points to win a title. Back in the day, you could win a title with 80 odd. I think they've been 87, 88. But I'm not sure they've ever broke 90. Right. They might have to break 90 to do it now, which they're halfway. They're sort of on par to do. But they've lost one game all season. It's brilliant, of 18 games. They probably can afford to lose one or two more.
Yeah, a couple more. I think back to Rob, to your point, last season when we all expect them to finish in the top four and we give them tons of praise, they fell away right at the end, didn't they? They fell away and blew it, really, with about four, five, six games to go.
That Spurs in, didn't they? That's Spurs where you're coming from.
So there's always that part of it as well. And just before we move on to Tottenham, Rob, there's one other player that I wanted to mention.
Yeah.
And he didn't have a brilliant game today. Eddie Nketiah, Rob, had two a 7th minute and a 69th minute chance to score and to bury Spurs a little bit. Mm. And he didn't quite take them. But I'm still really enjoying Eddie Nketiah, Rob, given this opportunity at this moment in time in this team in big games where he's getting chances. Now, I know, you know, you want to be champions. He's going to have to bury some of those chances that he missed today and in the previous game as well.
Yeah.
I just kind of like the way that I think he's, what I'm saying is, I think he's done better, looks better than I expected in general play, in general football, of linking it, making a few turns, running in behind, pressurising. I think he's a bit more of an all-round footballer than I thought. It's just, obviously, you know, we know he's got to stick those chances in, but he's getting chances, Rob, and I like forwards that, particularly young ones that have got, that can have got, you know, a way to improve, keep getting in the right spots, and those chances will come. I mean, the left foot, he was patient when he tried to volley it in the first half, wasn't it, Rob? He got saved by Luis.
Yeah.
So I just think it didn't work for him today, and I'm not picking him out because he had a great game. I'm picking him out because I like what he's doing, and I hope for him that those, some of those chances start to go in, because he's getting himself in good spots regularly.
Yeah, it's a really good point. And his all-round game, I think, is testament to how he's been brought up in an academy where he understands and appreciates things. Thought today, Robin, you make a really good point. It was in the second half he got played through. Odegaard played him a ball, and he went to take a touch, and it ran just a little bit away from him, and then Lloris came in and made the save.
Yeah, wide.
Now, when you're top of your game, when you're at thing level, that touch almost entices the keeper, and you slip it down the side. And that's a bit he's just got to get to, which is why he's the age he is, the experience he is. Yeah. But I agree with you. And the other thing, Rob, I think, and it's a point before as we move on about Arsenal, it's just that, and I know it's easy when you're winning, but there's a chemistry that Eddie Nketiah, somebody who's come to the academy, who Saka knows, who Martinelli knows, who enjoy playing with each other. If you went and put a centre forward who's coming in, just wants his goals, maybe giving the wingers a bad look when they don't get the ball, you just change something in there, Rob. I just feel those little relationships are just as important as the goals that he scores. That Eddie Nketiah is running channels and is linking the play, and he's making the odd mistake in the right area, but the chemistry feels right at the football club at the moment. That's why I wouldn't be rushing if I'm Arsenal. It doesn't look now the Mudryk thing, and that's a whole new story to get into, bringing somebody in the front line.
Yeah, just last thing, Rob. Honestly, the last point about Arsenal, again, and we've said it before, and you know, we love it when our producers give us the green light to go to the UK to watch games.
Yeah.
And watching Arsenal live from a great seat was the moment for me, one of my moments of the season, where I was like, wow, this team is very, very good.
Mm.
And I don't know how to explain it, but on the TV, of course, they look good, 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 good.
Yeah.
But seeing them live with their movements and the sharpness and the move on the ball and it just triggered when you said, like, you know, the groove nature, and they're on the same kind of wavelength throughout. I got such a strong sense of that when we were there watching and come back and win against West Ham United. Now, a team that haven't got so much chemistry, my friend, and look disconnected and quite honestly weird, is Tottenham Hotspur.
Yeah.
Is Antonio Conte, Rob, one of the most stubborn managers tactically that you've ever seen in the Premier League?
Yeah, but he's a winner. He's a stubborn winner. So that sort of creates an issue if you're into... I don't know, the end of goal zone today, we were talking about... We saw a Conte interview came and he wasn't a great look on his face. He wasn't particularly, you know, giving much away in terms of what he felt. And Bex asked after, like, Spurs, where we're talking, the five-point gap, bit of a gap starting to grow. And I said, it's fascinating, Bex, because if you look at the top five, the four above them, we're talking Arsenal, Man City, Newcastle United, all want to have the football. All want to play forward. All have a style that's grooved of pressing, of possession, of creating chances. Spurs, and it's up to them, and it's certainly under Conte, want to do it a different way. Now, at the moment, he's putting trust in a back three that I don't have the trust in. I thought Romero was close to getting a red card today, managed to stay the right side line, but was making challenges. You've got a goalkeeper who I think now it's becoming universal is going to need to be changed if you're going to the next level. You've got Kulusevski, you bring in, who I think is an excellent player, almost playing as another right back. Sonny's running back into the left back position. It's just not a good fit. And the thing I said to Bex is, at some point, Rob, and I'll talk for myself as a player. I'm all in for Conte. He's the man. He's won things. He's this. At some point, I'm going, this ain't great. We're not playing well. We can't get on the front foot. We're stuck back here, and we're losing the derbies 2-0. At some point, I'm starting to lose a bit of faith in him.
Well, I agree, mate. I agree. And yeah, that you can chuck in easily that he's a winner. You know, when he won at Chelsea in the Premier League, I get that. And he improved them to win. Mm. But he still had a lot of good players. I'm shocked at how he can sit back in these first halves and how this continues. And to be fair, he said it in his first few words. We started well. I think the first 4 or 5 minutes, they were on the front foot. But then it kind of drifts back into that normal kind of... Mm. And how he can allow those two central midfield players to get run ragged in the Odegaard goal is such a good example of, and you point out, Rob, with the midfield players getting caught on one side. If they ever do that, there's a ton of space in the middle of the park. Mm. I'm just surprised that he's continuing with the same. I don't know, I might expect him to play three in midfield and play with two up front. He's continuing to be same way. I mean, they're fifth, Rob. They're fifth. They're not a ton of points. They're 5 points behind. They played a game extra. So he's trying to grind it out. I mean, you look at Heung-min Son, my goodness, of a player that's such a... If we all think about our best images of Heung-min Son, what a player. What a player. Finishing both feet. Quick. Runs in behind. Presses. Smiles on his face. Links up. Is energetic. Loves his football. Mm. Goodness gracious, there's none of that you can see in him now, and it's sad. You know, the game against Leicester, we scored a hat-trick. You know, everybody's smiling, he's smiling, oh, thank goodness for that. But it still hasn't, and I can't, I'm sorry, but I can't, it's got, some of it has got to go to the manager for the way that he's asking him to play and what he's expecting him to do. Heung-min Son is such an honest player, one of the most honest players I've ever seen in the league. He will get back and have his fullback. He will put his position. Mm. When the ball breaks down, he'll get back level with those midfield players. He'll make that up. He'll make that space. He'll create that four across. He's so honest. And I think it's hurting his own game. If he was a bit more greedy, a bit more selfish, stayed high, like I'm sure Richarlison's going to do when he gets back in the team as a wide player. Well, saying that, Richarlison's pretty honest as well.
Yeah.
But find a way to be more effective. It's stunning to me. And the difference in intensity, Rob, I can't believe it.
Yeah.
And, you know, if one thing we thought that Antonio Conte would get this team to be is physically fit. Mm. So if they are a fit team, why can't they play with the same intensity as the second 45 minutes, where, by the way, Arsenal couldn't play around it. They couldn't play around it. And Lee Dixon and commentary saying they didn't play so well. They couldn't. That's because Spurs are in their face, front foot pressing. Mm. I just, why that's not encouraged more in the first half, when they are meant to be fit, they are meant to be grooved, they are playing the same system every single time almost, they should be ready to do that. But yet still we get this kind of cautious approach, and quite honestly they look clumsy and stodgy when they have the ball.
And you make the point, you know, the stubbornness, Rob, because I don't think it's going to change. I think if Spurs are going to get a top four spot and start to look more likely, I think it's going to be the football. It's not going to be great. There's going to be halves of football where they dominate. There's going to be half of stodginess and not great defending and all these things. And I just think that's how they got into the Champions League last time, and it's how they'll make or not make it this time, mate. I think some big questions will be asked. I mean, Conte's contract's up, and we don't know what's going to happen there. The goalkeeper, Rob, and he's been a World Cup winner. He's been a great captain for the football club. He's served his time particularly well. Yeah. It's time now for Hugo Lloris. I think we've all sort of said, I've been saying for a little while, if you're going to, you know, the success they want, look at Aaron Ramsdale, look at Bernd Leno was in goal before. Bernd Leno, in the end, was like Hugo Lloris. Every now and then, he'd let you down with something in a big game and it cost you. Mm. I think that's where Hugo Lloris is right now, Rob. Mm.
Yeah, it's certainly a really embarrassing error for the first goal, and I get there was a little deflection, but that was really bad. I mean, to be fair to him, right, he did make some good saves, come off his line a couple of times. Yeah. Nketiah, the one you talked about, where Nketiah took it a little bit wide, he was quick off his line. So he still makes plenty of good saves, but you're right, this is getting too often now. And I just sat with my son watching the games over the weekend, and we looked at Jordan Pickford. We used to sort of say about Jordan Pickford, Rob, that... you know, he's this flamboyant. Yeah. I mean, he's just a bit... sometimes you know whether you trust him because he's so blimmin' live-wire.
Yeah.
Don't say that anymore. He's a good goalkeeper. Mm. He's a really... And somebody, I mean, how long are Everton going to, how long is he going to be okay staying with Everton when they're, when stuff's going on there that's not great? He will be the one, I think, that the some of the big boys that say, listen, he's done well enough over a period of time now where he's a Champions League goalkeeper. Mm. We know he's a national team for England. That might be something they look at. But no, back to Hugo Lloris. Yeah, I agree. Legend, world champion. Yeah. I mean, you know, forever. But just not at his best. And that might be something they look at totally. Yeah, totally.
Just before we wrap up the North London derby, Robin, I don't know if you saw on the broadcast, so there were some scenes at the end of the game where I think there was a little bit of an altercation between Richarlison and Ramsdale, the goalkeeper, and then Ramsdale went towards his goal to get his bottle out the back. There was, at first we weren't sure what happened, but we've now had seen on the pictures that a fan jumped up and kicked Ramsdale in the back. Obviously, he was pushed away by all the stewards and things there. You know, Mikel Arteta ran and got his Arsenal players away from that end of the pitch up to the end. They celebrated. Yeah. But some news has come out, Rob, and Tottenham have put a statement. I think it's right for us to just read the statement so people are aware of what happens. Yeah. But Tottenham have said, we're appalled by the behaviour of a supporter that attempted to attack the Arsenal goalkeeper Aaron Ramsdale at the end of today's game. Violence in any form has no place in the football club. This club has reviewed the CCTV footage to identify the supporter and will be working with the Met Police, Arsenal and Aaron Ramsdale to take the strongest possible action, including an immediate ban from Tottenham Hotspur Stadium. So that's Tottenham coming out. I don't know if you did get a chance to see it, Rob. It was a little bit of a melee and things going on after the game, but it's not a good look for English football when fans are doing that, regardless of what's happening. It's a North London derby. I know there's two sides to the derby, but player safety is paramount in those situations.
Yeah, listen, we're right to bring it up. It was awful. I saw it immediately. I don't know how much force was behind the kick, but you could obviously see the guy stepping over, trying to step onto the field and got a kick towards the back. I guess he's trying to kick him towards the head. It looked like he made contact in the back, what I could see. He didn't get tons of angles on it. Whatever. A fan crossing that divide, going from stands, the seating area, onto the field or the area around the pitch is not okay. And it's, listen, we go way back and we've seen some pretty horrific things like that. And I'm pleased that you had that. I haven't seen that report. I'm pleased that the Spurs have jumped on it. I hope desperately that they can recognise him from what he did. And he's got to have a life ban. Got to have a life ban. You're a fan and you try and get on the field and kick somebody towards the back or the head. A player that's meant to be in a safe environment in that area. So, yeah, hated it. Absolutely hated it. And let's hope they can get hold of him and kick him out.
Yeah, no room for that. Regardless of what you're leading to, what colours, what team you support, and Spurs doing the right thing, coming out with that statement. And I'm sure with CCTV and people who saw the incident, that person is going to be banned. OK, mate, there was another big derby this weekend. It was at Old Trafford. It was red versus blue. It was Ten Hag versus Pep. What a game, mate. What a game. Tactically, I thought it was fascinating. Incident, drama, goals, storylines, United revival. I mean, where do we start?
Yeah, brilliant, isn't it? Well, I think we should probably start with the incident, Rob, because I can rarely remember such an incident that's caused so much reaction and opinion and going over it and over it and over it and over it. The offside, of course, the equalising goal that Bruno Fernandes scored as Marcus Rashford run through in an offside position.
Yeah.
Oh, gosh. So here's my take on it, okay? And I've got two angles to this. And sometimes people who react and shout things and online and all that don't often know all the rules and stuff.
Yeah.
As I know the rules and I reread them again, I thought it was the correct decision to let the goal stand, given the rules.
Yeah.
And the rules basically, you know, we know he doesn't touch the ball. It's all about interfering with play. And there's three different bullet points on interfering with play. And the main kind of one is, does he stop somebody challenging for the ball?
Yeah.
Now, I understand that Akanji is close to that.
Yeah.
So when I say I agree with the rules as they are, I just think that Akanji probably wouldn't have got across if Marcus Rashford is invisible, he's not there, you know, of course, the goalkeeper, I'll get on to the second part of it. So that was the thing. Could Akanji get across and make a challenge? Was Rashford's position stopping him from do so? That there, I understand that's subjective, but I just think when I see it, I've seen it a load of times, I don't know. I think the way the rule is written, that's okay, right? So that's my first take. My second point is, I don't like the law as it is, Rob.
No.
I mean, and this is where the people come and hammer. Yeah. What is he? I totally agree. The goalkeeper's set for a shot from Rashford, and it changes. People are aware that he's there. Now, so I feel like when an offside, there should be another bullet point in the law, in the FIFA laws of the game that says something like, you know, if the offside play is so close to the ball, is it within 1 or 2 yards?
Yeah.
Then he's got to affect so many different people
around him, even though
it might not affect their ability to challenge and win. It will affect. Now, I know we don't want to stop the thing for offside. We've got to remember what it was brought in for.
Yeah.
And, you know, if a player is stood goal-hanging by this and defenders saying, well, I'm worried about him, well, you haven't got to be worried about him. But when a player, the offside player, is not goal-hanging in somewhere else, but he's right in the middle of the play with the ball right at his feet, then I think there should be another bullet point saying, like, you know, when a player is offside, gets really close. And I think the law now is clearly used a couple of times actually in the laws, clearly attempts to play the ball. Well, he didn't clearly attempt to play the ball. He ran very close to it and then quickly got out the way. So somebody said the law's an ass, and I think, something that the laws should look at adding maybe another line in that stuff. But as they are right now, I'm stressing this. I've just told you what I feel like. It felt wrong to me. It felt wrong. But if you go through those laws, no. And that's what VAR did, and that's what the officials do.
Yeah.
That's what they're doing. No, he's not stopping challenging. No, he's not in the line of sight or whatever. That's a goalkeeper thing. Any of the line of sight. Is he stopped somebody challenging? Does his you know, impact on the ball affect other players? So there's a few that are subjectively tight, but my opinion is, as the laws, it was okay, but I think there's got to be something added there because it didn't feel right. What's your take, Rob?
It didn't feel right. I also didn't look right, Rob, when I saw it. So for me, I totally agree. And as we were going through it, and it was one of them that, you know, there's a few that happen during the course of a season that you go, oh, we need to make sure we get this one right. So I asked our researcher to give me all the lines of what. Does he attempt to play the ball? No. It's clearly offside. Does he affect the person's opponent? No. So I came to the same conclusion.
Yeah,
by all those rules and all those laws, he actually isn't being played. The goal should stand. But I just think, he affects Akanji. If somebody's in front of the ball, and somebody, and I don't know if you've seen it, Rob, somebody on social media has taken Rashford out of the picture. It's actually a picture with Rashford not there. And you can see that Akanji could slide and go and get that ball if Rashford wasn't there. So, in a way, he's got to affect him. I thought the goalkeeper should trigger, but because he's kind of standing and almost saying, like, I'm not getting involved, does he interrupt somebody's ability or something to go and make the ball? He doesn't really.
And challenge the ball.
That's
the law now.
Yeah. And that's he doesn't, but if he wasn't there...
You said that Akanji could have got across.
Yeah, I think. The other one, Robin, and I saw the position, and you've mentioned, I thought he had a big influence on the goalkeeper. I think if Marcus Rashford is running through, and Ederson's taking a position for if Marcus Rashford's taking a shot. Now, if he sees... If Marcus went there and Bruno Fernandes, he might have a different position. He might be set in a different way, because he's thinking, OK, Bruno's going to have to bend this, or... So... He affected the goalkeeper.
Yeah. But that's not in the laws now, Rob.
Correct. That's not in the laws. Yeah. So
couldn't have challenged, but it's not in the
laws. Couldn't have challenged.
So there's that extra piece that
there
should be.
There's something missing that is a loophole that allowed it. And you know, you try and give your opinion of what you think, and then you give the law to explain why it wasn't given. And some people kind of jump on and go, oh, you don't get it. No, I do get it, but I'm telling you why it was given. Not that I actually didn't. Yes. I think the flag should go up. It shouldn't have been a goal, but it was, and they scored, Rob, and we are where we are now.
Yeah, that's right. I mean, I think we're on a similar thing there, Rob, and whether they'll look at that. And sometimes you get these, Rob, where it's handball or something that really tests the nuances of the written rule.
Yeah.
And that's one, a brilliant example of, well, actually, probably no, not that one. Yeah, it's a good goal, but it, like again, we don't have to repeat about it. So no. That
well, we also know Howard Webb's in charge, Rob, isn't he? Howard Webb's in charge of the PGMOL now, and we know him well, and he is trying to change things and look at things. So, as you say, that might be something that goes to him. Let's start off with United's setup, Rob, and Ten Hag's tactical play. Luke Shaw played at centre-back again. Martinez, Lindelof and Maguire on the bench. So, obviously, load of trust in him. He went Fred and Casemiro in the middle of the park. Martial up top, Rashford one side. Bruno the other. In terms of what he did, I thought he slowed City down, Rob. And you know, you did a great breakdown recently on how City tried to get those five players up in the pit. So, whether it's a Gundogan or a Kevin De Bruyne and that. So Ten Hag decided Casemiro's going to deal with Bernardo Silva. Fred's going to deal with KDB.
Yeah.
Any one of the centre-halves, if Haaland went short, was going to go man-to-man and tie. And then the two full-backs deal with the wide players. Mm. Nullified a lot of what City were trying to do.
It really did. It really did. I mean, it's a mixture of that, of well done Eric Ten Hag and well done for setting the team up a little bit differently. I mean, brave decision, by the way, on Luke Shaw. Mm. And like you said, Fred was very close to De Bruyne most of the time. Yeah. Not always. Yeah. It wasn't literally man-to-man all over the place, but he did a good job. Married with the fact that City, I thought, again, most credit to Manchester United, but that City's football was weak, nothing going forward in the fight. I think they got one shot. They had one shot on target in the whole game. Half, of course. One shot on target in the whole game. First half, possession, and United sat back and allowed that. That's normal against City with the way that they play. But City didn't create anything. And, of course, they always leave themselves vulnerable. How many times have we said it? Usually on the back of Champions League nights, where the latter stages, the good sides that that do have a game plan and organise and block up, and hit them on the counter-attack, it was another one of those. Yeah. And United could have scored goals in the first half, by the way, that City got caught out the space in behind. Pep said at the end, you know, Man United are very good in transition. Mm. They are. They are very good in transition, and that's Man City's Achilles heel, as it probably is always going to be, given they have the ball, they manoeuvre it so well up the field, that players get involved in positions where if it turns over or they slip on their ass or something happens, there's only two guys back there or maybe three. So classic game of proactive football possession against kind of a bit more reactive counter-attacking football, breakaway football, direct ball football to Rashford or whoever else to get in behind. And today or yesterday was a day where, the counter-attacking football came out on top. That's why a lot of teams do it. That's why Antonio Conte does it. That's why teams in major tournaments often do it to great success. So it was that day. And at the moment, Eric Ten Hag, you know, what he's doing, Rob, with some of these players, reinventing them is probably the most reinventing them, restarting them, resetting them.
Yeah.
Obvious examples of Marcus Rashford, who's playing at a level that we've never seen. And we all kind of expected at some point in his career, God, this player looks like he's got... But we didn't quite get there. And I remember so many times on this podcast, God, when are we going to wait for Rashford? When is this going to... Well, we're seeing it. Fair play to the manager. Yeah. Luke Shaw, another player that's been reinvented, reset. Not just as centre-back, by the way, but also as a left-back, he's playing really, really well. Yeah. There's quite a few players in this team. I mean, Fred showed that before, I suppose. Yeah. Bruno now is talking about the team element and how great they've been. Malacia is playing good at left-back. I mean... It really is. And Garnacho, another player that
he comes on for 20 minutes, doesn't he?
Looks
lively.
Players, Rob, where we wouldn't think. He makes decisions that we're like, and at the moment, it's working out pretty well. It's got to be exciting for Man United fans to sort of relax, take a breath, and say, oh, we got a good guy. We got a good guy in there. We trust him. He's getting the players to play a little bit. It's good to watch.
You know, good old Beck, she's straight into how many is in the title race. So I did the classic Jose, two big horses and a little horse. I mean, points wise, you'd have to say they're in the conversation. But realistically, is that something? I'm not so sure. I'm glad you haven't mentioned him, and I'm not sure if you did it on purpose. My underappreciated performer of the week, Robbie Musto, is Aaron Wan-Bissaka, by the way. Now, let me throw Aaron Wan-Bissaka at you.
Mm. I think you've got an argument in there, mate.
Yeah, everybody's telling me, which is including you by the sound of the thing, what he can't do. Oh, he can't. He's not a modern fullback. Oh, he can't get forward. Oh, he doesn't cross. Oh, Trent Alexander does this and Reece James does that and Wan-Bissaka does nothing. Oh, Wan-Bissaka's out of the team. Oh, sell Wan-Bissaka, send him back to Palace. He's only that level. Let me just go another route with you. Trent Alexander-Arnold can't one-on-one defend. Could do with spending a week with Wan-Bissaka. Wan-Bissaka's kind of been out the picture, Rob, for some time. He's got his head down. I've heard he's been doing personal training, getting himself in better shape, getting himself in better mental shape. I thought he totally shut down Phil Foden. Let's just go back to the reverse game where Foden and Haaland both got hat-tricks in the first Manchester Derby 6-3 win for City. I think he's simplifying his game going forward. I think he's another Ten Hag plus, that there's enough basic quality. His speed and his defending are important. Now can we start to work on the easier part of the game in some respect? Can he be a little bit more clinical and clever with his play? He's a balance to what the rest of the team are with his pace. He's a bit Kyle Walker-esque with his recovery pace. For a player who could have been out the door, Aaron Wan-Bissaka has prolonged his Manchester United career. And your face isn't giving me much encouragement, by the way.
Oh, can you see my face?
Yeah.
No, underappreciated. Yeah.
Don't particularly. Wan-Bissaka can't play. Everybody talks about he can't play, Rob. That's the first thing they say.
Listen, you make a nice argument. I just think, you know, I think he is appreciated for what he can do. He's a good defender and he's tough to get around and he makes sliding tackles and he's good. And he's appreciated for that. If you put me an argument where, you know what, Wan-Bissaka got round behind, put in a cross. You know, they scored from a cross, he plays a great through ball, he clips somebody over the top, and then you say to me he's underappreciated, I'd be like, yeah, there you go, yeah, maybe he is, maybe we don't see that in his game.
I hear you, my lord, but how about just appreciating a defender who defends? I know, hot, shock, horror,
yeah.
A defender who defends ain't bad, by the way. and Wan-Bissaka's one, a bit
no,
old school, a bit defensive. You know, he was out the door. Dallow was the new flavour and he was out the door. And I just think sometimes a player who gets his head down, who works hard, who gets back in the team and is now part of a team, will be going to Crystal Palace this week against his old mob, against Zaha and all that. And as a Manchester United player, many thought he'd be out the door. Many thought this window he'd be gone. And I just fair play to somebody who gets his head down, trains hard, gets back in the team.
Yeah. I'll tell you what you are. You'll be absolutely... justified in what you're saying. If he stays in the team, Rob, if he stays in that team and he continues to perform right back to Erik ten Hag's liking, and Man United finishing the top four, and he stays in that side, then fair play. Then you're absolutely right. If he's that good a player that can be in a top four team at right back at that football club with the pressure that comes, and he stays there, a real important part of a new look back four possibly, then I'm with you. I just don't know whether a few more weeks... he might find himself out the side, but it's an interesting
I wanted
to
throw it in. I'll phone Wan-Bissaka up and say stay in the team till the summer and Musty will be all in for you. Great win for United, gets them back up there. 38 points now with a game in hand against Newcastle, so top four football is looking something serious. Let's move it to the Amex Stadium, my friend. And I know you've watched this game. We saw the highlights and just kept looking up. And every time I looked up, the team in blue and white were flying forward and making things happen. Tony Marsh with a couple of goals. It's Brighton and Liverpool. Just before we get to Liverpool and you'll say, Rob, I just want a quick word on Roberto De Zerbi because a bit of a tough week, really. His club records, his leading scorer, Andrew Trossard, has decided that he sounds like he's downing tools a bit in training. Yeah. Attitude's been bad, was banned from the matchday squad, stay away. De Zerbi's concentrated on the players that he's got a 3-0 win against Liverpool. and all the headlines and all the pressure, if they lost that game and people start saying, well, do you have to get players around? I thought, well done, De Zerbi. Well done, Brighton. And that's a club that's going in the right direction. It's had a brilliant appointment with De Zerbi. And a manager who's showing a current-day player, actually, it isn't all about you, and it's not your own way. This football club's bigger than any individual.
It's a good way of starting this conversation, Rob. First off, it wasn't our feature game at 10 o'clock, but the score's coming in, and I'm like, I got to watch this. So I went back and watched it later in the day to get a sense of what happened. But back to your point, I mean, Leandro Trossard's been the star player. Mm-hmm. He has been the leading light for a few seasons now. Versatile, great attitude, brilliant ability, scoring goals. So to do this or have this kind of flare up a little bit because Trossard's gone public.
Yeah.
Like his agent said, he wants to leave the club. I think his contract's up, Rob, very soon.
I think he's got 18 months.
Next summer or something.
Yeah, 18 months, yeah.
Yeah, so he's nearly up. So he's got, after the next one, he'll be up. So big call, Rob, to be strong with him. Now, I think he's already said, like, I want to talk to him, you know, because it's going to be smart to get him back on board. But super brave to take that stand. Evan Ferguson, the young players in this team, and you talk about a club, Rob. I've had a little look. I took a deep dive into Brighton yesterday afternoon, and this club, I'm just fascinated with why at certain clubs I see in the league table now, looking at the league table, I see Brighton and Hove Albion 7th, I see Brentford 8th, Brentford that have 16,000 people, I think, at their stadiums. Like, the ownership is such an incredibly important part of any football club. And you put any name there, my old team, Oxford United, Cambridge United, you know, at Wimbledon, Rob. Any team, you bring in a top owner and it's going to go places. It happens to be Brighton and Hove Albion. Brilliant ownership. Tony Bloom, like, he's in this stats-based business of gambling and super analytical. Paul Barber, very, very experienced guy with the FA and with other clubs, Spurs, I think Vancouver for a little bit of time as well. They've lost, not only have they lost players, Rob, they've lost Win Stanley as well. I can't remember his first name. Is it Paul Win Stanley, the guy?
Paul Win Stanley,
main recruiting guru. Paul Win Stanley that's gone to Chelsea.
So not only
do they take the manager from Brighton, but they took their main recruiting guy as well. Now they're going to reshuffle, and there's another couple of guys that are going to go and do that stuff. But talk about a club that's well run. Now onto the game and to the football. I mean, I'm watching it, I'm like, well, hang on a minute, am I watching Brighton or am I watching
Barcelona
flipping Barcelona or Real Madrid? The dominance, Rob, and the football and the ease of which they beat Liverpool was stunning to me. Now, you know, we'll get very quickly, I'm sure, onto Liverpool. How poor they were, I suppose, helped. But the club as Brighton and the people that own it and some of the players, Rob, shocked me. And I'm going to just carry on here whilst I'm on a run. My underappreciated performer. And by the way, in this game, there were two that I wanted to pick. The first one I wanted to pick, which I didn't, so my honourable mention, is Solly Marsh. Solly Marsh. Where is he? He's a left-footed wing-back. He's been around the game for a long time, been at Brighton for a while. Yeah, he's technical, but nobody really gives him respect of being a top player. He's been brilliant, and he was brilliant in this game. But this is more of a... And we kind of combine this underappreciated with a little bit of... Watch him. Tip for the top. Kaoru Mitoma was in the World Cup for Japan.
Yeah.
I think it was at university. He did a thesis on dribbling past opponents. And I think he put a camera on his head and to sort of in this little class to try and figure out how he beats players and stuff. He underappreciated, my goodness. People watch out for him, please. And some of our listeners and watchers might already be aware of him and have seen him. He's a little plays on the left-hand side. He's got the quickest feet you've ever seen. Quickest, really good sharp feet. Change of direction. He assisted, I think, for the first goal in the game. What a little player he is, Mitoma. I mean, you know, we saw a little bit of him in the World Cup with Japan.
Yeah.
He didn't get a ton of playing time.
He didn't play that well.
Talk about fans' favourite, Rob. But fans' favourite. And dripping, I mean, he ripped, and I don't know if that's a very good word, but Trent Alexander-Arnold. So left winger against Trent being right back. I mean, Trent didn't really have any answers to stop him playing. Of course, with Liverpool, the way that they play, basically, Trent Alexander-Arnold plays in a back four as a right wing back. He's a right wing back in a back four. So back four is normally full backs, like, or outside backs, whatever you want to call him. He plays as a wing back. So he doesn't really play in that spot. Liverpool kind of play with three at the back without Trent. So that was even more of a problem. But I just thought I'd give everybody a flag up for Koru Mitoma, Japanese winger for Brighton. What a little player he is, mate.
Yeah, good, great shout. Seen bits of him. You see his speed. He's got that kind of feet there. He runs at people. He can change direction. He's low centre of body. Good choice. Let's talk about Liverpool, though, Rob, because as well as Brighton did and are doing, and, you know, props to them, sitting where they are in the table, seventh in the Premier League, above the likes of Liverpool and Chelsea and other big clubs. Liverpool, Rob, is becoming a story. Apparently, after the game, Jurgen Klopp went over to Liverpool fans, apologised. He went in the media and said that it's the worst performance under his reign. When we were doing the highlights, I did the highlights package, just obviously saw the goals and a couple of incidents, and I said, alarm bells are starting to ring at Anfield. This is starting to look a little bit more serious, Rob. This is starting to look like we might be talking rebuild. I know Van Dijk's out, I know one or two injuries with players, but what's there, what's been there, the history of this club, the history of Klopp with this group of players, doesn't seem to... Something doesn't feel right, Rob. Something feels a bit off.
Well, first off, I think what we have to say is what we say to a lot of clubs, Rob, and I'm going to say it about Liverpool as well. They have got a lot of injuries, right? And you know, we say that to other clubs sometimes if we give them a little bit of an out. Like Chelsea, I've said before that Chelsea, you know, this new manager's got these injuries, not ideal, getting the great... It's similar to Liverpool. They've got a ton of injuries... particularly the front and defensively. Well, I guess Van Dijk really is the only one defensively. Yeah. But attacking-wise, they got a lot of injured players. But, wow. I think Klopp said, Rob, that this may be the worst game he's ever managed.
He said.
Something in his career, not just at Liverpool. I couldn't believe it, actually. I couldn't believe it, Rob. They couldn't get the ball off Brighton. They couldn't get the ball off Brighton. There was nothing. There was nothing. They were flat. There was nothing going forward. Some of their football, he tried with the diamond in midfield, then he went with the 4-3-3. He's trying to get Cody Gakpo started, was played in a couple of different spots. Oxlade-Chamberlain's in the team at the moment. They're struggling a little bit. The midfield, the same thing. He made all the subs again. I couldn't believe how they were outplayed. They were outfought, and there was nothing. There was nothing from Liverpool to sort of like say, you know, we had a tough first half, but second half was more like it. Well, they got on the front foot, and Brighton had to defend well. Brighton were like, this is a comfortable, can we play you every week type of thing that the fans probably start singing, because it was that easy for Brighton. I was shocked at how bad Liverpool were. And you said just a couple of minutes ago, Rob, that alarm bells are ringing. I think the alarm bells are ringing about maybe a couple of months ago, when Jurgen Klopp was jumping around and reacting crazy to lots of things going on with the media, with his team. He was flipping. His head was all over the shop. He's not anymore, mate. He's not anymore. He's not even angry. And that is, the alarm bells, they've just gone off. They're done. Well, not they're done, but he doesn't look like he's getting frustrated the way that they're playing. He looks frustrated at the way they are. And, you know, not that I can't do anything about this, but like, this is kind of what we are right now. And the anger's gone, Rob. And that's more worrying. And when you talk about rebuild and stuff like that, I don't know whether, you know, I don't know how far off the truth that is, my friend. I know they got some injuries and stuff like that, but I was shocked. And listen, maybe all teams will have a shocking day you know, maybe this is just one for them, but I couldn't believe, and I'm pleased I went back to watch the game to see how bad it was. And Brighton, of course, silky, good, deserve you, by the way. I mean, early yet, then let's you know, chill a little bit on him. But he looks like he's continued what they were good at, and he's added what they weren't good at. And we all know what that is, the scoring,
putting the ball in the back of the net.
The goals from recent games, goals. That was promised, not promised, but that was kind of like known about this guy. Well, his previous clubs, he scores. He finds a way to make his team score goals. He's doing it. It's super impressive right now what Brighton are doing, where they are in the league. I mean, seventh in the league table. Yeah, I mean, it's
incredible.
It's stunning. But Liverpool, Rob, were beyond poor, beyond average. It was flat out like stale, awful. Mm.
Difficult times for Liverpool, and doesn't get any easier. It's next weekend, Rob. They're the early kickoff. Play Chelsea at home at Anfield, so we'll see how perform there. Now that one goes, because you know, it's a Chelsea team that obviously got a win this weekend, and we'll be looking to establish themselves. So yeah, work to do for Jurgen Klopp and Liverpool. Let's go back to a game that happened today. Newcastle United 1, Fulham 0. I think you could almost say two underappreciated teams, Rob, I think, over the course of the season. The job that Eddie Howe and Marco Silva have done at the two respective clubs. Again, a bit of incident, a bit of drama in this one with Newcastle United winning the game 1-0. Alexander Isak coming on and scoring late on. But Mitrovic had a chance for Fulham, former Newcastle player, with a penalty. It was one of those where he was slipping and hit his foot with the ball, so you can't touch the ball twice to go in the net, which was a big, big blow for Fulham, not taking the 1-0 lead with that amount of time in the game. And then Newcastle put Saint-Maximin on second half. Alexander Isak was on, and Isak came up with an important goal, which means another 3 points for Newcastle. The only probably downside for Newcastle, Robin, have you heard that Bruno Guimarães had he twisted his ankle in a challenge in the first half after about 20 minutes. Stayed in the game for the rest of the half, which doesn't sound great, and then was seen in a surgical boot after the match and crutches. And Eddie Howe said he's hoping it's not too bad, it's just precautionary, but, I mean, that would be a blow to lose him. But Newcastle, my friend, keep winning. Keep this unbelievable. I think they're unbeaten in 14 Premier League games now, longest record in the league. Just incredible, incredible stuff that Eddie Howe's doing.
Yeah, it continues, doesn't it, Rob? Continues. And Fulham, by the way, are a good side, and they're a match for anybody. And they almost held on. And this is what, you know, Newcastle have at the moment. They've got they kind of got a sneaky good squad. And we talked about Isak and Saint-Maximin not being involved just yet. Well, they're back fit again, and they're off the bench and they're doing their thing. I see that I saw the highlights, Rob, a bit, and what's his name? Saint-Maximin almost scored from a shot just out of the box. Of course, Isak scores a little tap-in header from Callum Wilson, nodding it back. So it continues to go on, and defensively is what is probably what it's based on, that defensive kind of determination to keep clean sheets with the goalkeeper in a back four that you wouldn't expect when you get the names of a back four to be able to do that, but they're doing it amazingly well. Bruno Guimarães, that's a concern, because he's a brilliant player. He's a brilliant, brilliant player. The euphoria around the place right now is going to drive them on.
They're
not a lock, but they look top four bound to me. They got a good squad with people coming, getting fit again. I think you have got to respect them and put them in the title race if we're going to have this race that that we talk about a lot. Of course they're in the race. They're right there. Well, they're like 1 point behind Manchester City. So they got there on merit, on the back of this defensive solidity. And again, I didn't see every minute of this game because it was in that busy window, but I saw the highlights, and I you know, late goals against a good Fulham side with subs coming on and Isak scoring and place going crazy. It rolls on. Newcastle United, again, one of the, there's probably four or five massive stories, really. And Newcastle, third place in the Premier League after, well, they've done half of their games now, 19 games, is one of the stories of the season for sure.
Yeah, absolutely. Incredible job done by Eddie Howe and his staff up there. And Newcastle sitting pretty in the top four, and as you say, part of the conversation in the title race. The other big game this weekend, mate, was where there was some pressure. It was a derby. It was Chelsea at Stamford Bridge at home to Crystal Palace. Let's not forget, Chelsea lost 2-1 to Fulham on Thursday night. João Félix was on loan, got himself a red card. He's going to miss three games. He had his suspension to nine first-team players who were out injured. It was almost a great team that wasn't able to play for Chelsea that was. It meant that one or two players were given an opportunity. Betty Ashiel made his first start for Chelsea. Conor Gallagher started in midfield. Chukwuemeka started in midfield. So it was a younger-looking Chelsea team. How do you thought they did?
I thought they did all right, Rob. I thought the first 20-30 minutes, my notes consisted of, like, possession for nothing. Tippy-tappy Chelsea, I thought, a little bit. You know, looked okay on the ball. That's like 70%, had one shot or something. But I thought, to be fair, as the first half wore on, they started to penetrate a little bit more. I thought Conor Gallagher was good.
Yeah.
I thought Conor Gallagher was very, very good in midfield, made good runs in behind. He actually got in behind and pulled the ball back. Yeah. Didn't always find the right situation, solution there. And as a day that we see Mudryk in the stands, Rob, Mikhailo Mudryk, this new player that they poached away from Arsenal, offered more money, I guess, to make him come to Stamford Bridge on an 8.5-year contract. An 8.5-year contract, like just 18 months away from a testimonial, which is amazing. These contracts, long ones. I just think, Rob, like, are we at the beginning of a big transition of Chelsea playing squad and the team?
Yeah.
And we're going to see more and more of these young players coming in and really transforming what they are or what they have been over the last couple of seasons, but also setting themselves up to be something maybe special for the next decade.
Yeah.
Now, Chelsea in the past, Rob, and I've always noted this with them, that through great recruitment, they've managed to get great squads together that last a long, long time.
Yeah.
Whether it's, you know, Frank Lampard, your John Terry's, your signings of Drogba and Eden Hazard that stayed a long time.
Yeah.
Like, that's the basis of their success when they won all the stuff. They kept changing managers. Yeah. But they had a great squad. Mm. I think they're trying to do that. Now, a lot of criticism for Todd Bowley and maybe a little scattergun approach of bringing people in. But just maybe that all this crazy amount of money that he's spending on players, maybe there's some good young ones in there. Maybe there's a good team that's, you know, Wesley Fofana is one of those is out right now. You know, Lewis Hall, 18 years of age. You know, Gallagher you talk about, Chuk Mueka you talk about, can play versatile. I thought Badiashile, left side centre back in a back four in this game, looked pretty good. Apart from Thiago Silva, of course, again, like, looks like a different level to everybody else, but, you know, he's not one for the future. I just think, and Havertz, to be fair to him, I thought he was poor, because I watched both games. I watched Thursday's game, poor Kai Havertz against Fulham. And just a quick shout, João Félix, by the way, looked really good until,
on the pitch, wasn't he?
You know, his excitement got away with him. Yeah, he was really, really good. So I just think, well, for me, I'm going to start to kind of think about this team as something that, they're going to have a bit of a nightmare season, really, results and stuff like that. But it's obvious they're trying to buy a lot of the best players on the planet, the younger players, so at some point you might start to see this team evolve into something that might be exciting. Long way to go, of course.
Yeah. I think it's a really good point.
They spend a ton of money, Rob. They can't all be bad players, these young ones.
We touched on it in one of the Bridge shows in Bexhouse, and I said, it might be that, you know, and David Ornstein actually came on today, I should mention this, and obviously talked about the Mudryk signing and, you know, Chelsea nipping instead of Arsenal, and said, just need to put out there that Graham Potter has more to say with most of the transfers than people think. People who just feel like these things are just being bought and Potter doesn't know anything about it. So that was encouraging, Robin. And I said to Bex that if Bowley and Potter have got their heads together and they're starting to amass a group. Now, well, I totally agree with you. I think there's a new cycle coming at Chelsea. And that new cycle is a group of younger profile players coming in. But I tell you what else is also important, Rob. Some players need to leave the football club. Aspilicueta's been a brilliant servant, and it's always hard to talk of people who've been as good as him, but his time's come. His time's come. Kovacic and Jorginho, probably their time's done. Aubameyang, his time's done. You know, if I can keep Thiago Silva for another year and he can help these year or two, then they're great. But I also think, Rob, you're right in terms of there's amassing a group of young, talented players, and he's getting rid of some of the players that actually don't fit or not the right profile or wrong age or not attitude. And then Rob, I think we get to see the qualities of Graham Potter that make him a great manager working on the training ground and getting people to play. Because that's a bit we haven't really seen yet. Graham Potter's had to deal 100%. With so much other stuff that we haven't really seen what's the best of him. The best of him when he's coaching good young players.
I think you're right, Rob. And I think also, Let's look back on the structure of the club. It's changed now. Mm. They've got Christopher Vivell, I think it is, and Wyn Stanley, as we talked about in terms of scouting. They've got a new technical director. You know, the staff has changed. So now in the recruitment side of things, they've got some of the best in the business.
Yeah.
Now they're in their positions.
Yeah.
So the theory is, if they do work that you might expect from these guys, then everything starts to improve.
Yeah.
You know, I think it's a great shout, Rob, with some of the older players that's going to start to transition out. You know what it may look like? I don't know, it's reminding me of, is Arsenal.
Yeah.
Arsenal
yeah.
with your David Luiz and Aubameyang and
Ozil
players that old and that were like not the future and flipping Ozil, all these. And I'm not saying there's a ton of problem players there, but Arsenal, what they've done in terms of young players, and a couple come through the academy, like that Chelsea can bring players through the academy, and I've got some now that are coming through with young signings. Arsenal made a lot of young signings that have worked out. Took them a couple of seasons maybe to get really... that might be what they're trying to do. The long contracts are interesting.
Yeah.
I think we know that that's partly to space out the transfer fee over for many years, you kind of stay on the right side of financial fair play, which has got to start be like flagging
have to
a little
look at
bit
that
with the amount of money they're spending. But the long contracts maybe help that. So new structure, everything's new, and you're right. I mean, if Potter can get through this horrendous, like it feels like an awful kind of few weeks and maybe months as this continues. Wouldn't it be fun to see him with a fully fit squad, a lot of exciting new young players, and trying to build a new Chelsea team?
Yeah.
Now there might be fans out there that don't want to hear that want better performances right now, and is he up to it, and all this kind of stuff. Mm. I just think you've got to respect what the thought process is of Todd Boehly and this club in terms of a new structure. They've got a new manager that's done well with young players, that plays a good brand of football. They've got the good expert recruitment people in now. And they've got tons of money to spend and bringing in some of these very, very talented young players in the hope of a future special Chelsea project. We'll see.
Yeah, absolutely right. 1-0 win, important win, takes a bit of pressure off, gets the 3 points against a Palace team. Things are just going a little bit flat for Patrick Vieira at the moment. I think that's 5 defeats in 6 all competitions, out of the cup competitions. Just needs to make sure. Maybe a couple of faces in there. Just needs to freshen things up a little bit. But they do play Man United on Wednesday, so that place will be jumping. Sellers Park will be jumping as they host Manchester United. That's always a big game for Palace fans. Listen, mate, we're an hour in, so let's touch on a few of the other results from games this weekend, and then we'll just have a quick Gareth Bale kind of tip of the hat before we wrap things up. Let's start you at Brentford. Brentford 2, Bournemouth 0. It was Friday night football at the GTEC. It's another piece of evidence of the great work that Thomas Frank does. Shows he can win without Ivan Toney. They beat Liverpool 3-1 with Ivan Toney with the penalty kick that gets the first goal. Really interesting, Rob, and maybe it's a conversation we'll just touch on at the end of things. But Thomas Frank signed, I think, a 5-year contract at Brentford, and I think it's great business. What a good manager. We had some great behind-the-scenes shots on Friday. There's a little bit more access given by the Premier League, so we got interviews at half-time. We got a few shots in the dressing room. He's charismatic, Rob. He's got a good relationship with players. There's a real feel around the football club. Another top operator who's come into the league, albeit coming up through the championships, and bought something and shown that good coaching and good recruitment and good management can hold you a good place in the Premier League.
Good shout, Rob. Let me just chuck this in as a one-off comment I'll make right now. In terms of, I mean, it's obvious what a job he's done at Brighton, Brentford.
Yeah.
I just don't know whether, and again, this is me, you know, am I being a football snob here a little bit? In terms of where he could go next, right? Normally, if you might see, well, we've seen it with Brighton, Graham Potter, the style of football gets a top job.
Yeah.
That's just one question on this game, Rob. Is his physical, high energy, direct at times style of football, that I think stats say they're the most,
go from front to back,
Could that? Yeah, a little bit more than any of the others.
Yeah.
Would that maybe make him a little bit less attractive, a bit more of a risk of a bigger club that might look to him in the future? That's my one question.
Yeah, it's a good question. It carries merit. I don't think so, because if I was an owner, I'd look at his game. I don't think he's just long ball. I think he can play through the lines at times. I think he understands his players. He's got Ivan Toney, play to his strength, but they can play quick counter-attack last week against Liverpool, counter-attacked the second goal against Bournemouth. I've got to tell you, Robin, there is talk out there, and we'll mention a little bit about David Moyes and West Ham. I tell you what, if I was West Ham, I'd be all over that, by the way. If there's a release clause, I think it'd be perfect for somebody like him.
Yeah, maybe. One thing's for sure, he's doing a brilliant job. 2-0 against Bournemouth. They keep rolling on. It's just very impressive.
Let's go to Everton, my friend, because this didn't go to plan for Frank Lampard. Everton 1, Southampton 2. Great week for Southampton. Let's give credit to them. Nathan Jones, he was won in the FA Cup against Palace. Yes. He won in the League Cup against Manchester City, and he wins in the Premier League, his first Premier League win, 2-1. Well done to him. Well done to his team, and well done to James Ward-Prowse, who continues to play at another level. Worrying times, my friend, for Everton, and we haven't got time on this podcast. We may at some point have to do an Everton podcast, get our mate Tim Howard in and sit down and have a chat, because it's a sad day off the pitch for Everton with what was going on, the fans, where the fans, the owners have been told, don't come to the football club because of your safety. It was a sad day on the pitch in terms of what we're seeing, Rob, and I know that they've got problems. It's not a great squad. They're a better team. Their names in there are better than Southampton's. They lose the game. It's a club I thought that showed a bad side of itself at the weekend when they're better than this, Everton. They're a better football club. They're better people than what this weekend showed.
Yeah, listen, I don't have to repeat any of that, Rob, really. You know, fans threatening board members is horrible for me. The board, when can they come back then? When can they come back and watch the team that they're trying to help? And you can criticise. And first off, by the way, this one, of course, this is a minority, I'm assuming. Yeah. You know, we know Everton, the club, and we know that we've played them. Brilliant club, brilliant supporters, great atmosphere. So I can't imagine it's the whole set of foul or a big majority. It's a minority that maybe threatened some of these, which is there's no room in the game for that, of course. You know, they're screaming at the end of the game, you're not fit to wear the shirt. They're turning their anger now really onto the maybe the playing side of things. Like you, Rob, when I go through this Everton team, it's better than this. Mm. And listen, we like Frank and he cares about this club. He did an amazing job at the end of last season where the fans, we talked about how they wouldn't let the club go down. It's an amazing supporting club. And you know, I want to say that Frank's a man to get him out of it, but I look at this team, it's not bad. I mean, they brought in those, Tarkovsky's a good defender, Coda's a good defender, you've got Onana, who's maybe the best player in the club right now. Onana can get four, like, what a good player, scores the first goal just before half-time. Yeah. You've got Jessica Garnagay that's a little older now, but his experience, he's good. He's a good protecting player. You know, you've got Anthony Gordon, you know, Calvert-Lewin is fit now. I mean, shouldn't they be a bit better than this, Rob? Like, we need to have different podcasts. There's so much to say of so many games, so many clubs. But I feel like I love Frank. We know him a little bit. He's the nicest guy in the world. But I feel this team should be doing better with the players they've got. And that's all we can do as analysts, Rob, is to look at the squad. Mm. We know all these players. What we're seeing, could they be organised, coached differently to get better results? And I'm starting to think, maybe yes, and maybe somebody else. Mm. And it seems crazy. They've had so many different managers, and maybe some of them is the same bunch of players. Yeah. I just feel it's not a bad squad, and they shouldn't be like, well, what are they? They're joint bottom.
They're joint bottom in the league. Yeah, not good enough, mate.
It's awful.
Turmoil at the football club. They got out of trouble last season. Looks like they're going to be fighting it again. And the last line on this is, I said to recently, Bex, you used to remember when Everton were seen as like best of the rest, not quite the big six, but they were one of them teams that, you know, will be the next. I mean, now they become relegation for them.
Yeah, Moisey.
I mean, it's incredible. Yeah. Let's take it to the East Midlands. A big derby for them in that part of the world, and I know it well. Nottingham Forest played Leicester City. Forest, Rob, have got a little bit of momentum. 2 goals from Brennan Johnson in a big game against Leicester City team that had chances. Harvey Barnes had a couple of good looks at goal, probably should have done better. But Steve Cooper's kind of got a little bit of momentum going, Robin. I'll just take a quick look at the quick look at the table to say that Nottingham Forest are now in 13th place on 20 points.
Yeah.
20 points.
Amazing. Absolutely amazing. Absolutely amazing. 20 points. Like, just back-to-back victories, what it can do for you in this league table. Above Leicester City. Mm. Leicester City, who we kind of thought maybe a month or so ago before the World Cup, just got their stuff together a little bit and got some results. They're now 2 points. They're 2 points from bottom of the league table, Leicester.
Yeah.
And somebody said it. I don't. It might have been you, Rob. I don't think it was you. I think somebody said, maybe in our group, that, yeah, Leicester are doing better now, but I think they're going to go back down again. I think they're going to struggle. That person, whoever it was, might be right. Mm. Might be right. I mean, they're all of a sudden they're sinking down again. But Nottingham Forest, I mean, fair play. Yeah. Fair play to find a way with all that group. And the team's similar now. I looked at the team and it's kind of similar. They're not making so many changes. And wins were 3 points. You know, what I think they've got five wins, Rob, from 19. Yeah. And what do we say? Exactly halfway through. We always say that teams look for 10 wins. Because that's some jumps up to 30 points. They're going to get some draws, you know, to get around 35, 38 points. They've got, they're halfway there, Nottingham Forest.
Yeah.
You know, 19 games played, five wins. He's finding something. And in this league, and I tweeted out, Rob, again this weekend, if you look at this league table, by the way, this is, it's hysterical, astonishing, amazing league table. Just is.
Yeah.
West Ham, Everton in the bottom three. You know, Arsenal there, Newcastle there, Liverpool, Chelsea. I'm looking at them and mid-table.
Brighton, Brentford.
I mean, Nottingham Forest. I mean, it's it's a crazy table. Yeah. I mean, it's why we love this sport, and particularly, of course, the Premier League. So, no, fair play to Nottingham Forest. Wow.
Cooper,
and watch out Leicester.
Well done.
Let's just keep an eye on Leicester.
We had Aston Villa 2, Leeds 1. Mate, Villa getting the job done on Unai Emery again. Jesse Marsh is going to have to just watch his step a little bit, Rob. Need a few more points to get safe. I think they're sort of, what are they, 14th in the table now. But
yeah, they're only 17.
They're only 2 points away from the bottom three. You know, a couple of bad results and all of a sudden the optics don't look good. So, you know, Jesse's got to keep continuing to do things well there. And the final game, Wolves 1, West Ham 0. And we heard, I think it was David Ornstein said, and then it was put out there, was some sort of official statement that the West Ham board are considering the position of David Moyes, I believe, which makes you think, is this a first start towards possibly making a change?
Well, of course, when it's not a surprise, Rob, is it, really? I mean, I think everybody in and around the club realise what a great job David Moyes has done over the last couple of seasons. So that would enable him to have the maximum amount of time, I would think, to put this right and to go on a run.
Yeah.
But, you know, you get into the second half of the season and you're still around the bottom three.
Yeah.
And I understand the itchy finger, well, hang on a minute. There's actually some decent managers that are out of job right now, out of work, and there's a few potentials that could be really, really good. How about going and getting Roberto De Zerbi, by the way, for West Ham? Too early? Too soon?
Yeah, Rob? And Brighton fans, please. That was Musto, the Robbie Musto, not the Robbie Early.
Well, I'm sorry. I'm sorry.
Yeah, it could be a good job for somebody.
Excites me. Good club, good squad there,
and obviously David Moyes having a little struggle of things. So, listen, that wraps up the league for this weekend. Just before we go, mate, I just thought we'd tip our hat to what some are suggesting is one of the greatest British players. It has been produced. Gareth Bale retired this week. He won 11 major trophies, 5 Champions League trophies, my friend. 5 Champions League, 3 La Liga trophies, 1 Copa del Rey, 1 EFL Cup, which was, I think, 2008 with Spurs back in the day, and an MLS Cup winner with LAFC last week. So, absolute winner, my friend. I remember this kid going from Southampton to Tottenham. I think Harry Redknapp was the manager at Spurs, Rob, and I can remember the first 15 or 20 games, and our viewers can check this, that every time Bale was involved or played, they lost. And it was almost like they were talking like, he's not going to make it. They were talking about getting him out on loan somewhere. So his start was terrible. And then I also remember, Rob, Champions League nights with Spurs playing some of the biggest teams in Europe.
Inter,
and Gareth Bale.
Inter? Remember Inter?
Inter, when he Cafu, it was a fullback, and gave Cafu, I think he retired Cafu.
Was it Maicon? It was a legendary fullback.
Yeah.
I can't think of it was now. It was a legendary fullback that he ripped to pieces because of his pace.
Yeah, I mean, he retired him, I think. I think after that, it was done. But, those nights of Bale and the goals and the thing. At the time, Robbie, he was the hottest thing in English football. The hottest thing in it. My son's always, he grew up as a lefty, and he always, Gareth Bale was his hero at that time. What a great career he's had, Rob. Yeah. I think at times he's been slightly disrespected. in terms of what he's done and what he's brought to teams. And, you know, people have always talked about the golf being more important than that. I think that's disrespectful to a player who's trained as hard as he's trained, won what he's run, his body's always been in brilliant shape, he's looked after himself. Even at the end of his career, he's still winning things. What he's done, you know, put his country, Wales, on his back, got him into major tournaments. And I believe they're talking about a role for him in Wales, which would be very fitting. But just thought it was important that we tipped up to one of the greats in that respect, Gareth Bale.
No, it's a good shout, mate. And you did a great job there of saying so many of the positive things. I mean, overhead kick goals in Champions League finals. I mean, it's stunning what he's done and what he's able to do. I mean, yeah, he got a bit of stick, didn't he, when he's at Real Madrid? Yeah. And newspapers give him a little bit of stick over there. And it made you sort of question his desire. Does he still want to play? Yeah. We don't know what's going on when he's over in La Liga, of course. But some of the goals... and his scoring ability, and even the MLS final where he steps up and scores that goal late on. What a phenomenal, naturally gifted footballer. Yeah. Whether he could have done more, Rob, for Real Madrid and been more of an integral... I don't know. I mean, the medals speak for themselves, of course. I just feel like, if I'm being totally honest... Why wasn't he more loved at Real Madrid? Why there was a... I don't know, it seemed to be... a kind of a weird...
Well, there was a period, I think...
this guy's talent who stepped up in different teams. Yeah.
I think there seemed to be a period where people thought he was injured for Madrid, but brilliant player for his club and country in Wales. Yeah. And you know what? I just think, Gareth Bale, enjoy your retirement, my friend. You've earned the right.
Yeah.
Listen, mate, we're going to wrap things up. It's been a pretty long one and a weekend of derbies. It's the red half that cities that have celebrated. Manchester United went a goal down, still found a way to win against Manchester City. Arsenal had the skill in the first half. I thought the bravery and determination in the second half to beat Spurs in the big North London affair. We'll be back on Thursday, that's January the 19th. We've got a midweek review. United take on Palace on Wednesday and then City host Spurs on the Thursday. But for now, I'm Earl. He's Musty. Together with the two Robbies, thanks for watching and listening. Be safe, stay healthy. It's a good night from me.
And it's good night from him. Good night.
Good night.